Hi, everybody. Welcome to the teleconference. We're here with Alan Weiss, and the topic today is mastering the conversation. Really excited about this call. This idea was born from a mentor summit that Alan just recently did, and a group of us got together and said, you know what, why don't we get together and as a group just try to really build efficacy around this, you know, really try to master this on our own. So we reached out to Alan, and he agreed to do this teleconference, and hopefully, you know, we can get some great words of wisdom from him on how to do this. I'm going to take a little while to set this up because this is kind of a springboard from a previous teleconference. There's a number of teleconferences that Alan's done, but the one that's most appropriate or that relates the best to this particular teleconference is the language of the sale. Back in around 2003 or 2004, Alan introduced us to this concept of the progression. And we've heard, a lot of us on the call have heard him say that language controls the discussion, discussion controls the relationship, and the relationship controls the business. And in this teleconference, we're going to try to probe a little bit deeper on that into actually mastering the conversation and to try to make it self-governing. As an admin note, if you happen to join and you didn't hear the announcement, you're all muted to keep down the ambient noise, but you can unmute yourself by pressing *6. So if you want to say something or ask a question when we have the slot for that, please remember that you need to press *6 in order to talk. So I think we have a fun and engaging agenda today. I'll facilitate through this with some questions, and we also have a few role plays, which will be fun. And we might have, like I said, we might have some time for some Q&A, so we'll see how it goes. So thanks a lot, Alan, for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here, John. Thanks for setting it up. Thanks to you and Sima for all the hard work you're doing these things. It's wonderful.
Oh, great. So, today's not restricted to the sales process, but it's an obvious area of focus, so I'd like to start quickly, very quickly, reviewing the 10 areas of improvement that you outlined in the language of the sale. You said that we, in order to improve our language during the sales process, we should establish peer-level communication. We should remember the apothecary scale, which is basically, emphasize value over the resistance side of the conversation. Agree with objections to surmount them. Use provocative questions, find the emotion, not the logic, shift embracing paradigms, which make them feel like they're in their own comfort zone of sorts, ask permission, demonstrate authority and expertise subtly, use process visuals, and always provide options. That's a pretty good set of techniques.
I'm probably not going to have to say anything this teleconference. You just keep going.
Okay, let's do that. I think I needed to set that up because I think that's a terrific set of techniques. But I think as far as mastering the conversation, if we're going to try to master the process of doing this, that's really what I want to explore here. So I wanted to start with your journey. I mean, based on hearing you and your story from the past, it sounds like let me ask it this way. Is this something that you developed consciously over time, or is this something that kind of you adapted to?
Well, if it, you mean language.
Being in control of the conversation.
I noticed from when I was very young, I mean, going back to grammar school, for God's sake, that it was easy to stand up in a crowd, if you had something to say. And that meant two things, the content and the process. So if you had a good idea, that was important. But if you could express even a mediocre idea in an interesting and intriguing way, that was pretty important too. And if you think about it, when you're young, what usually holds sway? It's the person who's the loudest, who uses the most obscenity, or, can quote the best athletic statistic or whatever it is. But suddenly in school that changes, and the teachers, despite what they say, develop favorites based on people who respond well and who give them the most help in their teaching by being more interactive. And so that was a lesson I learned real quickly because it made life a lot easier. I was fortunate. I went to inner city schools, but at the time in grammar school, where I learned much more than I did in high school, by the way, they were teaching you what language is about. They taught you the 8 parts of speech. They taught you how to look up new words. They teach you how to use them so that you remember them and things like that. And it was like riding a bike or touch typing. You never forget it.
Yeah. So, and then as you develop in your professional career, I know that you have a good strength with writing, but you also tell the story, but I think Ben sent you into some training situations initially. You didn't want to do it. Is that true?
Yeah, when I first went to Kepnetrigo, this the training firm in Princeton, it specialized in training and training trainers. And when I first went through the training myself, I was wondering if I'd get through it, and I said I could certainly never do what this guy in front of the room is doing. His name was Mitch. I still remember him. He had a beard. And Mitch was training trainers, and I thought it was the hardest thing I'd ever seen. And about 4 years later, I was the recognized finest trainer of trainers in the country. And even when I was an officer in the company, once a year for the next 7 years, I was there for 11 years, once a quarter I would put on a train-the-training program for 2 weeks that people would wait to come to. They'd wait to come to my programs. So you never know. And I found out that really it got to be pretty simple. And so after that, I never looked at anything and said, wow, how can I do that? I looked at things and said, I wonder when I'll be doing that.
Oh, okay. But you've coached people throughout the years on helping them with their language and their conversation skills. Is that correct?
Well, of course. And, I mean, let me just give you a very contemporary example here to bring home the power of all this. They're playing these tapes of a speech President Obama made recently praising some military people, in which he continually used the word corpsman. And, of course, although the word has a P in it, the P is silent, and it's you're a Navy corpsman, not a corpsman. I remember when we used to sing, you know, when I was in school and way back, we used to sing Christmas carols and the Marine Corps song and the Army song. I mean, all this was politically correct back then. And one of the songs, I think it was the Caissons Go Rolling Along, said, here's health to you and to our corps, C-O-R-P-S, which is one of the two components of an army. You know, a corps is made up of several divisions. Well, we used to sing it, here's health to you and to our corps, and the music teacher would stop us and say, you don't sing health to a corpse. There's a silent P. It's pronounced corps. And I learned that in the sixth grade, and I never forgot it. Well, reading off a teleprompter, not really knowing language well, Obama made a big mistake, and he made it repeatedly. So it wasn't just an accident. We all slip up. Every one of us makes mistakes. But he said corpsman about five times. So he doesn't understand the ideology of the word. He doesn't understand the nature or the cognate or anything else. So consequently, once he did that, his entire message lost its power. His honoring people, what he was doing there, everybody just focused on the error, especially the media. Is that fair? No. Is it right? No. Is that what happens? Yes. And so your choice of language will determine to what degree people respect you, listen to you, follow you, purchase from you, you name it. And that's why I'm such a stickler on this stuff. It really is crucial.
Wow, that's great. So if you want to master this process on your own, what are some of the keys to mastering any process in that in general or this process in specifically?
Well, when you say this process, what are you talking about, the use of language?
The use of language in controlling the conversation, directing the conversation to where you want it to go.
Well, in that case, what you have to master is this. The first thing you have to know is where you want the conversation to go. So a sale, for example, a project, is a series of small yeses. And so you have to know what your next close is going to be. If I'm talking to you on the phone, I want to know if you're the buyer. If you are the buyer, I want to get a face-to-face meeting. When I get a face-to-face meeting, I want to establish a relationship, and so forth and so on. Almost everybody on this call, I venture, has seen my consulting model. So consequently, what's the next yes? You know, what's the next small yes in the process? Once you know that, you work backwards, and you steer the conversation gently but implacably toward that next yes. And so the language you use always lends itself toward there. Toward that goal. Some of you have been through the consulting college or some other things I've done, have seen me do my famous card trick where I guess the card of the person who's the volunteer. And I do it through selective questioning. And so you can drive a conversation through certain statements, through questioning, wherever you like, so long as you use several things. One is, you know the right questions to ask, and you can deal with either answer. Whatever answer you get, you can deal with. Secondly, you know what language to use that appears to be in the other person's self-interest. And thirdly, you're authoritative. You're confident. I went to lunch with a woman the other day who had purchased my services at an auction. She had purchased a lunch with me at an auction. And she wanted to go on to perfect what she does in terms of, let's just say, its image and you know, building relationships with the press and with employees and so on. But every single sentence ended like this. And whenever she said something, it wound up in this way. And when she ordered lunch, she ordered a hamburger. And so every single sentence was uptalk. It was not conclusive. It was not competent. It was not assertive. It was uptalk like this. And so every sentence was an interrogative. That's the first thing she has to change. So you have to act confident, be confident, and know where you're going. You have to know your navigation. You have to have a powerful motor. Not difficult.
So let me ask you this then. The thought process for entering into this situation, in the language of the sale, in the very top of the teleconference, you mentioned meeting with Marsh Carter. And so that was a pretty sizable piece of business for you. I think it was, what, $250,000 or something like that.
$350,000, but who's counting?
What were your thoughts like prior to entering that conference? You must have been jumping through hoops and hurdles and scaling walls and, you know, bayoneting gatekeepers to get to that point. But what? So you're right before the conversation. I mean, what's going through your mind?
Well, I had gone through quite a few people who had appeared to be buyers, and they were at lower level. But as the project got bigger, it turned out they weren't, and they referred me to the next person. So, you know, four levels later, it's a third of a million or better, and I've got to go see the CEO of State Street Bank at the time. And I'm ushered into Marsh Carter's office, and I said to myself, very impressive office. This guy was a Vietnam War officer and veteran, highly respected in the business and without, high ethics, and known as just a highly intellectual, very aggressive guy. And so Marsh Carter is sitting in this gorgeous, luxurious office, and I'm ushered into it. And I'm saying to myself at the time as I'm walking over, wow, what an opportunity this is. What a fabulous opportunity. People would kill for this opportunity. I said, you know, this is very existential. And as I sat down, he said, so, you're Alan Weiss. I said, yeah. He said, you're the consultant. I said, yeah. I said, you must be the CEO. He said, very funny. And we sat down, and we started to chat. And my feeling was to act like I had been there every day. I was just having these conversations every day. And if you think back to the language of the sale, and one of those items you mentioned was sort of framing people, putting people into the frame, I would say, you know, I remember I was talking to the president of Mercedes-Benz North America, or I was talking to the vice president of an insurance company, and we were chatting like that. And so that's what went through my mind. And then when we got the real point of that story, of course, is when he said, listen, our annual compound growth under my watch has been 22%. Why should we hire you? I realized that, you know, I had maybe 3 seconds to respond with something that could not be, well, Mr. Carter, you're a wonderful guy, and I don't know that could be improved upon, but maybe we could. I mean, he threw me out of his office head first. And so I simply said to him, how do you know it shouldn't have been 34%? Because I had listened, and part of speaking well and using language well is listening well. And he said, under my watch, which is an ego statement. And I knew he probably had another 2 years on the job, and he wanted to leave a legacy, and he wanted to leave a record there. I also knew he was a no-nonsense guy, and probably he had a lot of less yes men around him, as all people do in those positions, no reflection on State Street in particular. And so that's what I decided to do, and I decided, listen, in for a dime, in for a dollar. In the next 3 seconds, I'll make $350,000, or I won't, but it won't be because I didn't give it my best shot. And if you think of the recent Super Bowl, at the beginning of the second half, the Saints used an onside kick. Might not have worked, but you give it your best shot. They had also tried on 4th-and-1 from the 1-yard line to run for a touchdown and missed, but it didn't stop Sean Payton, the coach, from trying something bold again later. And that's how you walk through life. You do bold things.
That's excellent. So in that meeting, I mean, you weren't like rehearsing, what am I going to say, what if he says this, what if he says that. You were just kind of like really in the moment?
Yeah, I'm in the moment, and I knew what I would say if he asked me the expectable. I mean, if he said to me, tell me something about your background, I had 20 seconds I was going to give him. If he said to me, tell me how you came to us at State Street, I had 20 seconds I was going to give him. You always familiarize yourself and try to visualize what's going to happen. And there were, I don't know, 6 or 8 questions I anticipated he might ask me. And I was prepared to make small talk for a while if he wanted to, depending upon his style. But he said to me, you know, annual compound growth of 22%, best in the industry, never equaled, why should we hire you? I knew that there was only one way to answer that, and that was to challenge him right back again, because strong people like strong people. So I just picked a number, and if you notice, I increased it by a third. I hadn't thought about that. I just did. And I said, how do you know it shouldn't have been 34? And the both of us laughed. So,
yeah.
You know, you're in the moment. And you have to be confident, and you have to have the right language. And if you think about it, that's a very simple, very, very simple question.
Okay. So how much of that conversation did you expect? I mean, do you ever get into situations where you're kind of thrown, or are you pretty much prepared for anything that somebody's going to throw at you?
Well, it depends what you mean by prepared. I don't always anticipate the question, but I'm unintimidatable. You're not going to throw me. And so I consider it a personal challenge for someone to say something that I hadn't anticipated. I have to respond to it, which is why I take Q&A in almost every presentation I ever give. I mean, I take Q&A during keynotes if the format and the technology allow for it. So, you know, I just did a thing in Hawaii with Rob Nixon. He came up from Australia with 150 of his people in his coaching clubs. And that morning, the two of us decided to do something on stage, spur of the moment, which was probably the highlight of my day. So I'm constantly in the mood to hear things I haven't heard before because intellectually it challenges me. And just as you have to work out physically, you have to work your mind out. You have to keep it limber. You have to keep it stretched. But you have to view these things, see, John, most of this is attitudinal. You have to view these things as an opportunity, not a threat. And a question, an objection, a resistance, anything that's verbalized is an opportunity. But too many people see it as a threat. The only real threat is apathy.
Mm. Meaning they just don't care about what you're talking about.
Well, if somebody doesn't say anything, there's not much you can say back to them, is there?
Does it, in your mind, is it kind of a game? I mean, is it kind of like a fun game where you're looking for a challenge of sorts? Is it fun for you?
Life is a fun game. It better be. Otherwise, you got a tough morning every morning. So, yeah, I mean, life abounds in challenges. And some of them, you know, are pains in the neck. I mean, some of them, you know, I can't get my darn registration renewed because the Department of Motor Vehicles lost it. Now I have to get a new power of attorney from Bentley and get that to them again. And so I'm driving around, you know, with an unregistered car. But, you know, such is life. That's a challenge. But,
yeah.
But most challenges are more fun than that. Most challenges are, I don't know what John's going to ask me next. It's going to be fun. I don't know what the next email I get. You know, the thing that thrills me about email, I mean, despite the fact a lot of it's junk, is that when you open that next email, you never know what opportunity it holds. And I really love that stuff. I mean, it just could be anything. So you have to view life as a great challenge, and you have to view it as a way to have great fun. And fortunately, I guess I'm pretty easily amused.
That's great. Okay, so getting back to just what we can do ahead of time, because some of us are going to go off in groups and try to, you know, build this on our own. You know, some of us on the call might try to practice with a partner. I mean, is there a process here that you go through? I mean, is there certain things that you can advise us on how to approach this if we're really going to try to build this the skill on our own?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming this is this language and how you approach this stuff. So the first thing is don't use articles and pronouns and things that aren't specific because you never know what the antecedent is. So, but if you're talking about how you perfect your language and mentality and approach toward influencing people with language, here's what I'd suggest in no particular order. Number one is be concise, be pithy. Practice answering very briefly because the quicker you answer, the more opportunity the other person has to respond, and the quicker you can respond again, and the more you move things along. So number one is succinctity, you know, be succinct. Number two, use metaphor. Use colorful language, use analogies, use things that help the other individual to visualize quickly where it is you want to go and involve them in that. The third thing is build them into the picture. People, it's what you and I were talking about a while ago, people love a couple of things. One is to relate to something so it's not new, so they feel comfortable. And the second is to hear their own voice. So paint them into the picture, allow them to talk about themselves, and then allow them to start talking again so you understand where they want to go. And then the fourth thing is keep in mind that you have a certain destination with the conversation. So we're not talking about a general social conversation in which I'll just let the other person talk forever because I'm not interested in interacting usually, and I'll just make sure my glass is nearby. But in a business situation, you want to make sure that you know what your next yes is and where you want to go, and you want to get there as relatively quickly as you can. You don't want to take the local. You want to take the express. And so keep those kinds of things in mind. So if I'm acting in your self-interest or speaking in your self-interest, and if I'm using metaphor, and if I'm making you feel comfortable, and if I know where I want this conversation to go, you can bet it's going to get there pretty quickly.
Perfect. You know, we've been through the series of yeses in the sales process. Can you share with us, off the top of your head, any other situations where a series of yeses applies? Like, for instance, one of the challenges I, as you know, consistently deal with is gatekeepers. So, and I know that we've been through the process of getting through gatekeepers, but in the context of this series of yeses, moving from where you're at through the gatekeeper, how does that work?
If I understand you correctly, what you would say to a gatekeeper is something like this: is it true that you are very, very engaged here in trying to turn information technology into a viable strategic component of the organization's progress? And assuming you say yes to that, because if you say no, we have nothing much to talk about, assuming you say yes to that, I'd say, and would you agree that that would require that IT be viewed as more than just a tactical, responsive kind of entity, and more as a proactive, strategic, big-picture kind of entity? And assuming you say yes to that, I would say, then would you also agree that the person who makes these decisions about integrating IT has to be one of the people at the highest level of the company who has that kind of purview and overview? And assuming you say yes to that, my fourth question is going to be, then doesn't it make sense for you to introduce me to who that person is so that I can make this pitch to the person who can make this all happen? Now, you can change my words, change the phrases, change the order, add more questions than the four I used, but that's an example of two things. It's an example of consistency, and it's an example of constantly seeking yeses. Now, if you wanted to give a choice of yeses amongst all those, you could. You know, we could do this tomorrow or the day after. We could do it with you or with the boss. We could do it with an off-site meeting or an on-site meeting and so forth. But basically, what you want to do is keep people nodding their heads till they cannot resist you, because if I've said yes to the first three, it's inconsistent and therefore not in keeping with my self-image here to say no to the fourth thing. That's what the good fundraisers do. That's what people do who try to raise volunteers. It's a subtle but very, very effective technique, and that's what you have to build into your language. Get the other person nodding in the direction you want to go, and they can't come screeching to a halt and say, no, wait a minute, I'm going to abrogate everything I've just told you and say I don't want to do that.
That was brilliant. And you can, I'm guessing you can apply that to just about any situation, right?
Well, don't try it at home, but otherwise, yes.
Okay. So we have a couple of role plays, and so with that as a background, Sima, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Sima, I'm going to set you up here. Alan, in all these role plays, you're going to be the consultant. Let's set this up. Here's what's going on. Before speaking at a national meeting, Alan, for a client, a Fortune 500 client, you interviewed some of the vice presidents and regional directors. You delivered a great speech, and then you met with the CEO to do an event follow-up and share the results of the interviews. Here are the key issues that were unearthed and revealed. They have lower morale.
Jeez, John, should I have studied for this in advance? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry. I thought you wanted to be on the spot.
He actually shortened it for me. It was much longer.
Oh, you should see what these people said in the novels. So basically, you gave a speech. In preparation for the speech, you had some interviews, and you unearthed some issues with these VPs and directors. What you found is that they have some low morale, and they have problems communicating the culture and retaining the younger employees and implementing some of the values and creating a process for accountability. So you had a follow-up meeting with the CEO, who's going to be played by Sima, and she basically agreed to have a follow-up meeting. You discussed these issues that you uncovered through your interviews, and she said she agreed to a follow-up meeting, so in 2 weeks. And so now it's 2 weeks later, and you are in the office to discuss next steps. So, Sima, go ahead.
John, wait a minute. These four issues you mentioned, where did I get those from?
You did the interviews prior to the speech that you gave with some vice presidents and the directors in order to make your speech
good.
More.
I got it. Thank you. Okay.
I did the interviews to be able to prepare for the speech. And this organization is also like in the top 50 Fortune places to work, but they need to become like number one.
Okay, I got you.
All right, Sima, go ahead and welcome Alan. He just sat down.
Oh, hi, Alan. Thanks for coming in.
I'm happy to, Sima. I'm glad you're interested in the some of the results I put together here, some of which I shared in the speech and some of which I thought would be better just for your ears, you know?
Yeah, I know. Well, we talked about that at our last meeting, and I actually took great notes, and I discussed it with other people in the organization.
Well, what did you come up with when you talked to them about it?
That we need to do something to be able, that we do need to improve the situation because we want to become number one.
You want to become number one in what?
We want to become number one in the hospitality industry.
But what would indicate that? Do you mean number one in terms of a place to work, or number one in terms of sales, or number one in terms of a ranking somewhere? What are you interested in?
Well, we want to be number one in ranking, but we want that ranking also to be based on increased guest returns, increased customer sales, and increased satisfaction by our employees. Because remember, we want to be able to retain our younger employees.
All right. Well, that makes sense to me. I think those are doable. And so you would want to be known sort of as the Bulgari of the business, or as somebody who's very high-end where people want to come back. And would it be fair to say that cost isn't really the issue? The issue is the emotional satisfaction of returning to your property.
Well, actually, like we discussed last time, we have had to be in cost-cutting mode. So last time when we talked, you said that you might be able to help us do these things and with not a really huge...
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Right here.
Oh, we missed that last
part. So not really with a huge what?
Investment.
No, but that's not what I asked you, Sima. What I asked you was, how do you want these people to come back? I'm not talking about cost. I'm talking about your own objectives of being number one, of guest returns, of sales, and satisfaction. And what I said to you was, do you want people to come back irrespective of what your rooms cost? In other words, you're not competing on price, but because emotionally...
No, right.
They want your brand. Is that what you want?
That's right. We want to
okay.
surpass the Mandarin.
Okay. So you want to, if you want to surpass the Mandarin Oriental, then you want to be at a Four Seasons kind of level.
Yes.
All right. That's what I needed to know. Well, the four issues that you have here that we've talked about are related. You know, we talked about lower morale. We talked about poor communications and poor retention and lack of accountability. And so they're all related, and what they're related around is unhappy employees. And, of course, you're not going to have happy guests and happy customers with unhappy employees. So would you agree that that's a good place for us to start?
Yes, although, I mean, by and large, our employees, we're doing very well, but we want to be outstanding. So our low morale has to do with some of the cost-cutting measures we've had to institute. But overall, morale is high. But there are some areas where
you can't have it both ways. Okay.
Okay.
I did the interviews, and what came out was that you felt you had low morale, you had problems communicating, you had retention issues, and you had accountability problems. And those came out from your officers. And so you can't tell me now they don't exist. And so if you feel you've improved them in the last 2 weeks for some reason since we last talked, that's fine. But if these are the issues, these are the issues.
Yes.
So you agree those are the issues?
Yeah, those are the issues. Those are the issues that we need to improve. Yeah.
All right. Now, just because, you know, your morale might be better than some other hotel, but you're seeking here to be the best of the best. And so if that's your overall strategic goal, to be the best of the best, then you're right. You have to work on these areas. Now, the good news is they all revolve around one thing, and that is that your employees aren't terribly happy. And that cost-cutting, of course, might be part of it. And so you can't square a circle. You can't want to do things as cheaply as possible and cut costs and cut employees and so forth and also expect them to be happy. So what I would suggest is that we take a look at indeed what the causes are of employee discontent. We shop the business a little bit. We recommend some things that will be as cost-effective as possible to improve morale and to improve retention because, as you probably know, raising salaries is not a morale improvement, but other things can be. And I can create a proposal that gives you some options in how we go about doing that.
Well, how do you suggest we do that? What are some ideas you have right now?
Well, what we've done for other large companies are we shop the business, we hold interviews, we hold focus groups, we hold meetings with customers, both customers who return habitually and customers who have stopped returning. We take different samples at different times of the week and different times of the season, for example, busy periods during slack periods and so forth. We might not do all of those with you, but those are some ideas of how we operate.
Well, we have regular focus groups with our employees already.
well, obviously the problem isn't solved, is it?
No. So what would you suggest that you would do that would be different?
I just told you what we do. We're the best at this that there is. And so what I'd like to do is to put that together in a proposal so you could take a look at it, decide what investment you want to make for what return, and how we should proceed.
Okay. Well, last time when we met, too, I asked you for some ideas on processes that you've used before to make sure that people are accountable at every single level. So what do you suggest, what would you do in that area for us?
Well, you're asking me to consult for free right now, so if you'd like me to charge you for this, I will. But I'm not going to tell you how to fix the issue for two reasons. Number one is I'm not sure what the issue is. I'm not sure what the causes are. And it would be irresponsible of me to suggest solutions when we don't know the cause. All we'd be doing is slapping Band-Aids on things. But the second thing is I'm here to talk to you about how we might work together on a project like this. I'm not here to tell you how you would fix your problem.
So how would we work together?
Well, I'm going to tell you for the fourth time that I'll put a proposal together to show
okay.
you how that works if you're willing to answer a few questions for me.
Sure. What are they?
Well, okay. And now we go into objectives, measures, and value, which I'm not about to do.
Right.
Okay, so what are we talking about in terms of cost, Alan?
I have no idea, Simma. We haven't even gotten to what the project would look like. How would I know that?
Okay, so how are we going to get, so you're going to send me a proposal and show me some options about what you think the project would look like?
Based on the objectives and measures and value that we've just discussed, that you agree are what should be obtained, I'm going to send you a proposal with a choice of several options you can pick to work together. Each option will have different values, so you can invest as much or as little as you please based on the value you want to derive.
Okay, that sounds good. When can you have it to me by?
I can have it for you by tomorrow.
Okay.
If I do that, how quickly are you prepared to make a decision?
Well, I might want to run it by some of my vice presidents.
Well, I'll tell you right now, this is a strategic decision, and one of the things that's a problem in your organization is that accountability, as you've pointed out, isn't fixed firmly enough. This one's your accountability. And so you and I have this conceptual agreement. I don't have it with your vice presidents, nor should we have it with your vice presidents, because they're going to be made very uncomfortable by some of this stuff, including why they didn't do it themselves first. So I suggest that you and I reach agreement on this proposal. Then we can contact your vice presidents on how they're best involved in the implementation.
That sounds great, Alan. Thank you.
So if I get this to you tomorrow, how soon are you willing to make a decision?
Within 48 hours.
All right. So then
tomorrow
is Tuesday.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to call you on Thursday. Will you be in the office?
Yes.
All right. How is 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock is fine. I'll put it in my book.
Okay. Do you prefer I go through your regular number, or do you want me to call your cell phone?
You can call me on my cell phone.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Alan. Appreciate it. What you seemed a little irritated there for a while, and I think that's funny because you're there to get business, right?
Yeah, but I don't take any crap. I will not accept. This is no reflection on Simba, by the way. But I'm not going to accept stupid answers, and I'm not going to accept evasion. I'm not going to accept somebody says to me, "Well, what do you think we should do about this?" See, when somebody says, "Well, we've done this before," a lot of consultants pack up their tents and go. And my response is, "Yeah, then why are you talking to me?"
Mm-hmm.
So if you've done this before, obviously you haven't done it real well. Well, we've done this before. Why would I think that you doing it would be any better? Because we're the best there is at this. I don't know who you had here before, but they didn't do it right. So as you and I discussed, John, before this role play, I know exactly where I want to go. This is a buyer. I've already done this speech. I want to get conceptual agreement and submit a proposal. I'm not going to fool around with subordinates. I'm not going to be delegated elsewhere. I am going to nail the buyer down to conceptual agreement on what has to be done. And if the buyer is not going to get there, then the buyer is not going to get there. But I'm going to do my best to get the buyer there. But I do not take crap, because once you do that, you create the wrong dynamic. And
sure.
So when somebody says something to me that's illogical or doesn't make sense, I'm going to say, wait a minute, you're trying to square a circle here. One of my favorite phrases. You can't do that. You know, you're not going to cut costs, and you're not going to lay people off and raise morale. Forget about it.
Sure. And you don't have, I mean, you don't have any issues if that doesn't go anywhere. If you know, you push, because what I've noticed is that you push back a lot in this conversation. Are you worried at all that the sale is not going to go anywhere?
I never worry. I mean, was I worried when I said to Marsh Carter, how do you know it should have been 34%? That was $350,000. You can't worry. I mean, worry shows. You know, worry shows in the tenseness of your voice. It shows in your posture. It shows in how much you're willing to give away. I mean, why would you worry about this? There's another client somewhere. There's another prospect somewhere. This isn't the end of the world. And see, right. If you worry about every single buyer and you worry about getting every single piece of business, you have a poverty mentality. You're afraid not to get something. You consider it a personal rejection. And so if I push back now on the buyer and the buyer accepts the pushback, especially since I'm using logic, you know, I'm not saying repaint your office, you know, redecorate the lobby. I'm using logic. If I can push back and the buyer accepts that, then I know that the buyer is going to be very, very supportive and a partner when the project's here, and I have to push something then. But if the buyer says to me now, well, I don't know, Alan, it's going to take me a couple of weeks. You know, I'm going to pass it by people. We're going to get back to you. You know, do I really want that business? Because it's probably not going to turn out to be business, and I'll be spinning my wheels 2 weeks from now. I'd rather take my shot now and see how it goes. I'll walk out with a proposal that I can send, or I'll walk out with no business, no proposal. But either way, I know something. I know where I'm going.
You know, I just want to say, too, Alan, that one thing that really helped me in my meeting yesterday to get the next meeting was using one of the process visuals that I got from you in terms of competitive, distinct, and breakthrough.
Good. Yeah, fine. Obviously, you know, you can't do that very well on the phone, but in person you can. That's a good point.
No, I was there, obviously.
Well, that's great. So as you're going through this, Alan, you know, just to kind of summarize, it's just moving through a series of small yeses. I think that you get the sense that there's a sell there. And like you said, what was your primary objective going in there, just to get conceptual agreements so you could submit a proposal?
Yeah, because you told me in this case study, which I had never heard of before you told me about it, is that I had already met her and already interviewed the vice presidents. She told me they already had discussed this stuff. I had already delivered the speech for them. So there was no relationship building that was needed, and since there was some agreement that these were the issues, and I saw them as really related to one thing, I was just going to push ahead to get conceptual agreement and the proposal. So first I had to deal with some of the nonsense, you know, what is this going to cost, do we want to get the price low? You just sweep that aside, and onward you go.
Perfect. Okay, thanks, Alan. I have a couple more surprises for you. It's because we had a few people that submitted these scenarios, and so Scott, are you on the phone?
I am, yes.
Okay, so Alan, let's do another one here. Scott submitted a role play here where
Scott is this?
Scott Harper.
Scott Harper.
Hi, Alan.
Thank you very much. Okay.
So Bob, who's played by Scott, is a business unit president of a consumer healthcare company based in the U.S. You used to work together, but you haven't had active contact with him in 6 years. You'd like to reconnect and see if there's an opportunity for a business development engagement. Bob will definitely remember you, but in the context of a scientific expert who collaborated in the design and implementation of some oral products. You decide to pick up the phone and give Bob a call. Bob answers, so we'll take it from there.
Okay.
Any questions on
Hello?
The
offer? Bob, this is Alan Weiss. How you
hey,
doing?
Hey, Alan, how are you? Haven't heard from you for a long time.
It's been a very long time. But I hope you don't mind me giving you a call. Do you have 5 minutes to talk?
Yes, since
okay.
You emailed me and set it up, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, that's great. You've been doing some different things since I talked to you last. What's the latest you're up to here? I know your title, but, you know, you and I both know in these companies that can mean a lot of different things.
Well, you know that I joined this company last May. And so I've been really spending the last 9 months getting up to speed, and we have launched a couple of products, and one of them is doing really, really well. One of them, okay, and we're looking to expand our line and see what we can do about some of our competitors.
So is that the primary work you're doing? Your expanding line, launching products, and trying to gain market share?
Well, yes, of course. Okay, I'm responsible for this whole division for North America, and that's, you know, I have P&L responsibility, and so that's what I do.
Was it, you know, I remember the last time we spoke a couple of years ago. Was this part of your game plan, or was this sort of an opportunity that came along and you decided to seize it?
It was really opportunistic. I was back at Johnson & Johnson and doing okay, but Peter gave me a call after he moved over here, and he gave me an offer that I couldn't refuse, and it's a really nice opportunity.
Good for you. God, that's fabulous.
So what's going on with you?
Well, I've been opportunistic, too. It's interesting. When I left, my plan was first to go with, you know, the Acme company and to go into pharmaceutical consulting, and they needed somebody to head up, you know, their new product consultative area. And I did that for about 18 months, and then they got purchased. And they gave me an offer to stay with them, but it was a British company. But I realized that I really love doing this so much that maybe I had some entrepreneurialism in me. And so I took the severance package they gave me, and I launched my own business. And I've been working with firms that are putting new products into the market. I've been working with firms that are looking to increase consumer awareness. And I've been working with firms to test customer responsiveness. So it's been kind of fabulous, and I just never thought that this was the kind of work I'd be doing, but here I am. And so one of the things that I'm engaged in is I'm calling 27 people, of which you are one.
27.
Well, because there were 27 people when I went back and sorted through it all. And, I mean, if you ever do this exercise, let me know, and I'd love to get your number if you get the chance to tell me. There were 27 people who I said, these are people I want to stay in touch with who I think I can learn from in the future, and I might have something to provide for them. For example, one of them was old Mac Grevy, who I think you remember. He went out to Glaxo at one point. Another was Sue Mellon, who left pharma altogether, but she went over to J.P. Morgan Chase, and she's doing investment work.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And, well, there's another five or six people like that who are mutual friends, and then there's about 19 or so, you know, from the other side of my life who I've come across, one of whom goes back, you know, 30 years to college. So in any case, those are my big 27, and that's why I'm calling. I wanted to reawaken, sort of rekindle the relationship. So I hope you don't mind my just coming back into your life like this.
No, not at all. It's nice to catch up, but, you know, right now I really don't have any budget for consulting. And we've got some challenges, you know, how the economy's been. We've really got to concentrate our resources on this next product launch.
Well, I wasn't asking for consulting work. I've got an awful lot of it right now. Fortunate, so for some reason, this economy has brought on a lot of it. So, I mean, I really appreciate even considering that, but that wasn't my intent. But I did want to know if you'd like to have lunch one of these days. I would like to catch you up on some of these people who might be of help to you, given what they're doing now. And I'd also like to send you some stuff that I put together on new product launch on the house that you might find interesting.
Okay, well, sure. Send me the stuff. And do you get up to Rochester very much?
Yeah, I do. Why don't we do this? I'm going to be up there in March at least twice. Why don't I solidify the dates? I'll send you this stuff. I'll give you a call to see how you like it. We'll pick a date. And we'll get together. And, if lunch isn't good, I can meet you after work. I've been doing some business, some coaching business up there with ex-Kodak people, and that's what brings me to town.
Okay. Well, sure. That would be nice. So let me know, and I'll see if my calendar will let me. I'm pretty busy.
Okay. Well, is there anything in particular right now, any dates right now that look better than others so we don't waste each other's time?
You know, it's better if you check with my admin, Sue, and because I don't have my calendar right in front of me.
All right. You want to transfer me over? I'll do it right now.
Sure.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. Great, Alan. Thanks a lot. Scott, any follow-up questions or thoughts on that?
Well, other than the fact that Alan gave me a hell of a bigger track record than I have, which is, I guess, maybe I should have have built that into the conversation, because I don't have a lot of clients right now, having just started this in
January. You mean if you were me?
If I were you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what you have to do is you have to adjust this to your circumstances.
Sure,
but you
sure.
can also, I mean, there are some things that I'm not going to know about you. So when you say,
right.
Listen, I wasn't looking for consulting work. I've got a lot of business right now. You don't have to name where the clients are.
Right, right.
I don't think I ever did.
Okay. Well, that does help. So it's very concise and direct. And I actually had a bunch of objections that I never got to. So.
No, because I'm not selling you anything. See, and
yeah.
You know, I said, I focused you for while there were 27 people. You couldn't help but say, why 27? Right? Because I picked an odd number. And then I said, you know, I know some people who could be of help to you.
Uh-huh.
Might be interested to get together. And I said, I'm in your neighborhood. You know, we can get together. And I want to send you something of value. So when you're trying to rekindle a relationship like this, where by your criteria in this little case study, we haven't been in touch for quite a while, you
right.
can't just come out of the box saying, you know, I'd love to do consulting work for you. You've got to literally rekindle a relationship, and that's going to take some time.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you.
My pleasure.
So, Alan, going into this, what, you know, just to kind of spell it out, what's the objective then? In your mind, you called this person. What was your objective?
To restart the relationship, because the criteria you gave me were that we haven't spoken for quite a while, and I'm coming out of the blue. So the last thing I want to do is come out of the blue like I want something. The second mm-hmm. thing is I'm anticipating he has no budget, because he hasn't budgeted for some consultant. Somebody doesn't even know is a consultant who hasn't called him for a couple of years. But the third thing is that he's got a responsible position. He's a buyer. And from what you said, he is a buyer, and from what he explained, he's a buyer. And so I want to start a relationship with him. I'm in a good position in that I used to have a relationship with him, so I'm not starting from zero, but I'm in a bad situation wherein I haven't been wise enough to keep it kindled, to keep it at least lukewarm. And so I've got to start not from square zero, but probably from square one. And so that's what I'm going to do, because what I'm thinking here, John, is that this is going to be business in about 6 months.
Okay. So you go and you have lunch with him, and is there any objective in your mind for that lunch, or are you just kind of having lunch and having a good time? And
You never do that. In fact, so many conversations wander that I have to wonder where they're wandering to. You always have to have a next yes in mind. So I'm going to find out if the stuff I thought I sent him was important, and if so, could I send him more? I'm going to mention some names that could be of help to him, either from, I don't know, some kind of financial standpoint or some kind of marketing standpoint, just some kind of contact he could have with somebody. I'm going to solidify or further delineate what his needs are, and I'm going to check what the budget cycle is. Is there money now that's going somewhere else that he could actually use, or is his fiscal year, a calendar year, or different? What's he looking to do in the near future? And I'm going to be pushing toward that project. That's why I'm saying 6 months. It could be sooner. But I've got to rekindle this relationship, and it depends how well I can do that.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Alan. I want to know if Aviv, if you joined a little bit late and you're on the phone, if you could hit *6.
I'm here all the time.
Okay, Aviv. Alan, we have one last role play. Aviv, we got about 10 minutes left on the call, so let's try to move through this. So, Alan, let me set you up. Once again, you're the consultant. You're Aviv. The buyer in this case is the lead director for the board of directors. You've met with the executive vice president of HR.
Whoa. What does that mean, with lead director? I've never heard of that expression. I don't know what that means. Is he the chairman of the board?
Probably the chairman. Yeah, let's call him the chairman.
No, he's not the chairman.
Well, I don't know what lead director means. I've never heard the expression.
Well, that tells us I'm already enrolled now. That tells us maybe you're not up to the latest on the structures in board of directors.
Excuse me?
What?
Yeah, there is something called lead directors that often the board of directors nominate to be responsible to lead internal projects and internal initiatives for the board.
All right. So he's a lead director on a certain initiative. Sure if you looked at boards of governance organization charts, you would not see the designation lead director on most of them. So he's lead director for what initiative?
He is responsible to bring into the board some next development and training.
So he's lead director to bring to for development for the board itself?
Yes.
All right.
Okay. You've met with the executive vice president of HR, who is asked by him to search for experts who can help in the board development and training. You've never worked before with the board of directors of a publicly traded company, but the executive vice president, who's played by Aviv here, was impressed with you and is on the phone with you to introduce you to this lead director. So,
oh, wait a minute. This is the executive, God almighty, John. This is the executive vice president of HR.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm on the phone with him.
And the
director. And he wants to introduce you to this buyer who's the lead director.
On phone, and the other guy's on the phone too?
Yes.
Okay. I never would have agreed to this.
Why?
Well, because I want to meet people in person. I don't want to talk to them on the phone. And so I would have said to this HR person, listen, I'd like to meet this guy if that's what it takes and yada, yada. And when he says to me, let me set up a phone conference, I would have said, no, that really doesn't work. We need to meet in person. Phone conferences are notoriously inadequate for this kind of thing. And I won't take any more of his time in a regular meeting than I would on the phone. And so that's what I would have said. So I don't accept these kinds of phone calls as though they're auditions. They're very, very dangerous. You can't see inflection. You can't see body language. You can't really understand inflection and intonation too well. There are distractions. So this is not something I would normally do. Now, if you want me to do the role play for the sake of your teleconference, I will. But this is like asking me, you know, how would you ski downhill on one ski? I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. That's great. Well, that's the 1 cent already in this discussion. So, but I'm happy to play the phone call that this is a situation that has taken place.
All right.
Do you want to do it in person, or do you still want to go through with the phone call here, Aviv?
We can for the benefit of everybody else do it. Absolutely, sure.
You want to do it like you're in person then? This is an in-person meeting.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it as – okay, I didn't understand your question. Sure. Let's do it as if we were sitting in person, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm meeting
Aviv
in his office now. Is that right, John?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, good.
Go ahead and start it, Alan.
Okay. Aviv, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for taking the time. John, your HR of VP, your VP of HR was kind enough to set this up. How you doing?
Doing well.
Glad to hear it. I've got just two or three agenda points here, but since it was set up by a third party, I'd love to hear what's on your mind. What's your expectation for the meeting?
Well, I'd like to find out from you what is it you think we should be doing and what can you offer?
Okay. Well, that gets to my questions then, which probably should precede these. What is it that drove you to look for board development? Why is it important right now?
Well, there was agreement on the board that, we should always continue to develop and improve ourselves.
Was there a specific area that you felt deficient in, or is this just some general feeling that you should be better than you are?
You know, let's start the conversation in a different place. Tell me about your experience and your expertise, and why would you be qualified to help us?
Well, I don't know if I am, and that's why I have to ask you these questions. You're evaluating whether I'm right for you, and I'm trying to evaluate whether you're right for me. And so once I get a feel for what your objectives are, then we can talk about whether I'm the right guy or not. But we won't know if I'm the right guy until we know what your objectives are.
Well, that's fair, but can you give me an example of a bit of your experience and what kind of other boards have you worked with before?
I'll be happy to, but can we wait 10 minutes so I can understand what your objectives are so I know the right examples to give you?
Okay.
Okay. So, my question was, are you looking to correct some particular deficiency, or are you just trying to improve in general?
Improve in general.
Great. That's very helpful. Now, what would say to you, I understand you're the lead director on this. I understand you're the one responsible for sort of leading the initiative. What would represent to you and your colleagues the fact that, indeed, you have become better?
Alan, you're the expert. That's why you're here. What is it you would recommend that we do?
Well, Aviv, let me tell you something. No matter who you choose, you're starting at the wrong place. You keep looking at alternatives. What should we do? What should we do? What should we do? And if since you're a board and you should be acting and thinking strategically, which is my expertise with every client I've ever worked with, and this is the kind of value I can bring to you, I can tell you that you're starting at the wrong point. Now, if you want to continue to ask, what should we do, and how much will it cost, or what's your background, then you and I are not right for each other. However, if you're really looking for help, then you have to listen to the help. And the help I'm giving you right now on the house for free is, the first thing you have to tell me is, what does the idealized future state look like? Because if you can't identify for me what should look better, then how do we know we're making progress?
Well, Alan, we need to think more creatively. We need to think more critically, and we need to be able to support our CEO. And he's a brilliant guy, and we've got a successful strategy in the company. We just need to make sure that we're also fulfilling our fiduciary responsibility well, and that we are up to the latest in terms of the what's changing in the legislative environment. But I'm really concerned. I'd like to, you're the expert, I'd like to get to know some of the things you've done in boards and how you work with board of directors.
Well, what you're telling me about thinking more creatively and thinking more critically and making sure that you're up to date on regulatory and governance procedures and so forth is within the ballpark of what I do. Generally, what I do with boards is I help them with the three or four things that are most critical to any board. One is that they have to make sure that they're properly engaged in and evaluating the progress towards strategy. A second is that they're probably properly engaged in and evaluating the performance of senior management. A third is that they are meeting, that is, the organization is meeting, its net profit goals and its growth goals so that it can reinvest properly. And the fourth is that it's putting proper controls on itself. That is, it's bringing on new board members. It's creating diversity among the board. It's creating term limits. It's creating the proper subcommittees and so forth. For example, do you want me to give you a quick example of what that looks like?
Absolutely.
How big is your company? You're a publicly traded company. How big is your company in terms of revenue?
It's a $4 billion company.
How many board members do you have?
Six.
Your board right now, if I had a guess, is probably underrepresented. And so those are some of the best practices I can bring that you can evaluate and we'll evaluate together. Now,
sounds
I have
good.
A
I know we are out of time. We could move from here to a proposal and all that, but this is good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, let's put it off. Alan, real quickly, I mean, you want to debrief on what happened there a little bit, and then just kind of in summary, wrap up maybe some summary thoughts on mastering the conversation because we only have a couple of minutes left.
Well, Aviv was trying to give me a hard time. I mean, he was trying to say, look, I don't care. I want to know. So you tell me what you can do for us. Tell me what you can do for us, which is not, I mean, you hear that on occasion, and you can't succumb to that stuff. And what I told him, if you recall early on, was, look, you're asking me what I can do for you because you're trying to evaluate whether I'm right for you. Well, I got news for you. I'm trying to evaluate whether you're right for me. And there's no way either one of us will know that unless we understand what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, John, let me ask a follow-up question. Alan, if in this case, I do not have experience with publicly traded board of directors. And if that is a decision breaker or maker, how would you handle that?
Well, first of all, Aviv, they don't know that, and I wouldn't tell them.
Mm-hmm.
And if he said, can you tell me what experience you have with publicly traded company board of directors, I would say the following. The work I do, as you can imagine, given our conversation, is strictly confidential, and I cannot reveal clients, and I cannot reveal names. I can tell you the kinds of ways that I would help you and work with you and assist you once you answer some of my questions. And if we get to a point where prior to signing a proposal, you absolutely need a reference of some kind, I'll be happy to provide one. But I cannot divulge names any more than I would divulge your name. It would be a breach of fiduciary responsibility.
That's great.
And John, that brings us back to language, because that's the kind of language you need to use.
Okay. Can you wrap up for us real quick, just some summary thoughts before we exit?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, Alan.
Yeah,
thanks.
Well, my wrap-up would simply be this. There is basically only two conditions in which you use language, when you expect something and when you don't expect it. And almost, oxymoronically, you have to be prepared for both. And so there's no excuse ever not to be prepared for an objection or resistance or a rebuttal. You should know where you want to go next. Secondly, understand that you don't have to hit every ball out of the park. You just need to hit it over the net. You're playing volleyball, not baseball. And so you defray things. This last question from Aviv is a good example. You know, you've never done business with public sector boards. Well, the only way they know that is if you tell them. Don't tell them. And if they ask you directly, say, it's just not my policy. I can't tell you that. Just as you wouldn't want to be known yourself. This is called reversal, by the way. When somebody says, will you give us a 50% discount if I pay now? And I say to you, well, do you give your customers a 50% discount on the insurance policy if they pay immediately? And you say, yes. I say, well, that's why you need me. And if you say no, then I say, why should I do it? And so that's a reversal technique. And you ask the client if they would do what they're asking you to do. Client won't divulge confidential material. Why would you? So that's the kind of attitude you have to have. But, you know, what runs through these case studies we did in our conversation is you cannot be afraid. You have to be confident. You have to know who you are. You cannot be afraid of losing the business. You know, the sun will come up again tomorrow, unless the sun explodes, and that's beyond all our power to control.
That's terrific. Well, thanks a lot, Alan. I think that closes out our conference. Once again, it's been a terrific pleasure to have you on the phone. Thanks for all the great advice. I hope everybody on the call and everybody on the download really got a lot from that, and I really appreciate your time today, Alan.
I'm happy to do it. Again, I'm very grateful for you and Sima and everybody else on the forum, like Aviv, who puts in so much time and helps other people. It's greatly appreciated.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a great day, everybody. Talk to you soon.